What's up, everybody? This is Nowhere to Open Up podcast. I'm your host, Sean Dustin. We got a great guest for you again this evening, Anthony J. Bucci. And he spent 21 years in federal prison. That's a long time. We're going to get to him in a moment. But as usual, do me a favor. The website, anything, everywhere, anything you want to know about the show, rising, guest appearances, videos, audio, all the places. You can even review the show directly from the website, SeanDustin.com. Go ahead and go there. You can leave me a voice message if you want. If you're watching this and you're going, God, that guy, it just annoys the shit out of me. Well, jump on the voice message and tell me about it. I want to hear. So yeah, you can do that. And in all the other places like YouTube, if you're watching this on YouTube, when this comes out, do me a favor and subscribe. iTunes, rate, review. So easy. Just go in. It's a couple pokes and a swipe or two and you're done. That would help the show out immensely without even having to ask you for anything monetarily. Now, if you do want to support the show monetarily, I'd be more than happy to take your money. You can go ahead and drop that over on the website. And there's a donation tab over there. You can buy me a coffee or, what did I say, a microphone or something. You can help me out over that way if you choose so. So let's get to the program. Let's go over here. Let's do the intro. When I come back from the intro, we're going to talk to Anthony J. Bucci about his story and how he managed to get 21 years and what life is like before and then after since he's come out. All right, so we will be back in just a moment.
Sean Dustin spent time in federal and state prison for drug trafficking and fraud. Upon release in 2006, he had nothing but the clothes on his back, a bag of mail, and legal paperwork. In 2010, he kicked a longtime methamphetamine habit and started the long climb back up the ladder of life. This is the Nowhere to Go But Up podcast. If you want transparency and authenticity, you're in the right place. This is the Nowhere to Go But Up podcast, and this is Sean Dustin.
Anthony, what's happening, brother?
Hey, Sean. How you doing? Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, good to have you, man. Good to meet you, finally. Let me get this off of the screen here. Yeah, hey, why don't you go ahead and let everybody know a little bit about yourself and why you're here?
I'm here to tell my story of redemption, to try to help somebody or many people as possible. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm from a family of... Well, my father and my cousin are enforcers, tough guys, mob associates. I was raised in that family situation, and I followed their path is because I thought it was, you know, the cool, the right thing to do. But years later, I've learned my lesson the hard way, and I'd like to share my story with anybody out here. Especially young kids that are, you know, looking down the road and what path to follow. And hopefully I can help you and, you know, just make you see things clearly.
So from your about in your website, it said that you got a drug conspiracy, tried to take it to trial, and then ended up getting 21. So you took it to the box and then obviously lost and they hit you with the maximum. You know, what... First of all, what were some of the revelations that you had when you were doing your time? You know, because I think we all have some sort of revelation when we're there. You know, for myself, it was, you know, there was a point where I realized that I wasn't leaving. You know what I mean? That, you know, no one's coming to save me. You know, my behavior has landed me somewhere where – I can't talk my way out of it. I can't bullshit my way out of it. This is it. This is life for, you know, however long that they give me. There's that. But then there's also another level to that. Cause you know, once you get past all the bullshit and, you know, trying to blame everybody else for, you know, why you're there and, you know, I'm not guilty. And, you know, you hit another level of realization and revelation. Am I, did that happen for you at all?
Well, my first sentence was, I got 480 pounds of marijuana. I got 41 months. There was absolutely no revelation. It was crime school. It was see who I could meet. I learned no lesson. I actually got worse. I didn't have a revelation. I call it a spiritual awakening or a road to redemption until I was in my second bit, where I was sentenced to 21 years. And like you said, I went to trial, but I had no choice because the federal government said either you're going to cooperate to my lawyer or, you know, you're going to trial. There was no in between because they wanted a corrupt police force and they wanted me to, you know, tell on them. And when I got arrested, I immediately lawyered up. They didn't get one syllable out of me because that's how I was brought up. Mm-hmm. And I went to trial and I got 21 years. So when I hit the first yard in New York, I hit it running. You know, I always had a chip on my shoulder. I always say this, but I started with the pedal to the metal. I was like, anybody that crossed me, anybody that gave me a hard time, it was on. Not till I was about 7 years into my second sentence and everybody had just about abandoned me. My kids weren't speaking to me or mad at me. You know, I wasn't there again. My friends fell off the map because it's 21 years is like a life sentence to a lot of people. They forget about you no matter how good you were to them. And I was very bitter. And like I said, I didn't say it yet, but other podcasts I've said, I've spent a lot of time in solitary confinement, 3.5 years probably between the two sentences. And it was in solitary confinement at my lowest point, contemplating the worst, you know, why am I even here anymore, and all, and that, going down that road, that I said it's either end it or change. And I decided to change my life, and that's what I did.
So, well, good for you.
Pennsylvania prison called FCI Loretto at the time. I was doing 6 months solitary confinement, and I actually picked up a pen and started writing my masterpiece novel, Infinity Crew. This book saved my life. And I buried myself into writing because I always liked writing as a kid. I won some, you know, essay contests in school is one thing I was good at. And I told my tale of how I thought a real tough guy is supposed to be as far as loyalty and honor between his friends, because I had very close friends that told on me. But there's also betrayal in the book, because that's what happened. So the book is based on a lot of true stories and a lot of events that actually happened, but the names have been changed to protect the guilty, and it's fiction, and it's, you know, it's how I express myself and got through my bid. I also did a lot of other things. I volunteered and took care of sick and terminally ill inmates. I took 55 educational classes, college correspondence courses. I took a paralegal course. I will want an immediate release, actually, in 2019, two years early, because when prison reform came out, I found a loophole in it. And I got a compassionate release to go home and take care of my mom, who was paralyzed. She had a stroke. And the judge took all my extraordinary rehabilitation into effect. There was one more thing I did, too. I trained dogs for the handicap. And that was in a prison in Massachusetts called Fort Devens. I was going to say Fort Dix. That's another prison. And so, you know, I changed the revelation, as you call it, is, you know, I hit rock bottom and I needed to do something. I decided to be the best version of myself I could be. And I'm still working at it every day. It's not easy.
Yeah, that's the difference that I think I noticed. And congratulations in getting out and everything else. And I know that you had mentioned that you had lost your daughter, who was a state trooper recently. So I want to apologize for that. And, you know, my condolences go out to you. It can't be easy. And we'll get to that as well, too, in a part of this. One of the questions that I have before we move off the prison part of this. So what advice would you have, or what would you say to a kid out there right now if he's listening to this and he's getting involved in like some sort of the way the things that you said, right? You come from a neighborhood that you're trying to impress people, you know, you've got to live your life a certain way. Is it worth it?
I would give the advice I would give on anybody young who's contemplating traveling down the road, wrong path, would be, it's not worth it. You know, look at me. I made a lot of money and I did a lot of bad and stupid things. But when I got a pinched, first 41 months, then 21 years, 252 months, it's not worth it. The time you miss with your family, your children, if you have them, you cannot replace. Time is priceless. It's one of the only commodities you can't replace. Time, life, all that. So my advice is go to work. The real tough guy is there. He gets up in the middle of the night when his kids are crying. He helps the kids with the homework. He's there for them, molding them and helping. He's there for his wife, girlfriend, whoever. He's there for his mom. Like when my mom had a stroke, I was in prison. Yes, I set precedent. I was the first person to get out on a parental compassion release in the federal system. And I'm proud of that. And a lot of people went home to help their parents because of me. But I should have been there to begin with. And if I didn't travel down that wrong path, guys, young kids, men, women, you know, I would have been there for them. And that's what's important. And that is what a real tough guy does.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So we're going to go into the dog training part of this, because I think that that probably had an integral part in your recovery. And you know what I mean? As somebody who has a dog, I have a lab who's about 6-7 years old now. He's about to be 7. And this dog is imprinted on me, and he started out as just a regular house dog, but he turned out to end up being my therapy dog. And, you know, I have a hard time, you know, opening up to people and, you know, allowing folks to get close to me. And that doesn't facilitate free and learning how to, you know, love something, right? Again. And having a dog really helped me to do that. And I would imagine in being able to train a dog from a puppy, yes, it would be tough, you know, because you're going to have to let that dog go at some point, right? So you build this bond with it and you're going to have to let it go. But I would imagine that there's a lot of healing that goes on in between that, between you and the animal.
Very lot. After I helped that sick and terminally ill at the prison I was at, the warden head of medical actually came right to my cell and said, you know, you're doing an amazing job. These people, like one guy that just died, said, you know, you took great care of him. The guy was on his deathbed, and he asked the warden and medical director to come see me and thank him. His family sent me cards. It was like, you know, I took care of this guy till 4 days before he died. And, you know, I had a brotherhood with him. He had cancer, and he thought he had a sciatica problem. He went for x-rays and MRI, and he had bone cancer everywhere. So I cooked for him. I cleaned him for him. I took him to the shower. I didn't give him showers, but I helped him there. Did everything for him. And the warden said, you know, wherever you want to go, you've helped us with 3 or 4 people now. You know, and then that was my, you know, redemption and my giving back to society from a lot of the wrongs I did. I tried to make it right by becoming a better person. And I said, I'd love to get home closer to my mom. At that time, she hadn't even had a stroke yet. So when I got down to camp level, which is, you know, minimum security, you know, when you start out higher levels. And then when you stopped, you know, I started behaving, I moved down and I was going all the way to camp. And I didn't even have to go look for the warden. It was, he kept an eye on my prison record, and he sent for me at the chow hall because I never really went to chow. And somebody came back and said, the warden wants to see you. So I went, I got dressed and went to chow, and he said, you've been camp eligible for 2 months. You haven't even come to me. And I said, that's not my style. You know, I appreciate it, but, you know, I was hardcore convict still, you know, in my mind. You don't go talk to the cops or, you know, the warden. And then he said, where do you want to go? I said, I want to go to Fort Devens in Massachusetts near my mom. And I also researched it. They had a dog program, and I love dogs. So as you were saying, yeah, it's, it was, I got there. It took me a little while to get into the program. But once I got in the program, I got a dog. There was six, it was 6 weeks old, little baby, little puppy. And I raised that puppy till it was 13 months old. That was my therapy dog. Kept me sane. Dog slept right in the cell with me. Black labs. And then, you know, there was yellow labs too. But I had two black labs, and I got blonde lab. And it was the best thing ever. You know, it turned my life around in prison. It broke my heart when the dogs left me. But, you know, one went to a courthouse for young kids that were testifying, you know, that were molested or whatever. Another one went to a hospital, troubled teens. And the third one went to a guy who had PTSD. So it was an awesome, amazing experience, and I loved it.
Do you get to name the dogs?
No, they came named.
Okay. So what were their names?
I had Avalon, King, and Buttons.
And do you have a favorite, or do they all
Avalon.
Have a place?
Avalon was my baby.
Yeah, and what was so, and what did you like, so, what would you like about Avalon?
Avalon just loved me to death. Like you could see it, no matter, like I taught these dogs, you have to teach them over 50 commands. Mm-hmm. I taught Avalon like so over 60 commands. I would even like, you know, point my finger at him and he would fall down like I would shoot him. I taught him some extra commands. They kind of got mad at those, but, you know, this dog was so special. It was so smart. And, you know, he was just all about me. She was just all about me. You know, all the other dogs, you know, they make you bond with them and nobody can feed them.
Yeah.
You know, only you can take them out for the first month or two. But this dog was extra special. I loved her.
Yeah, that's how I feel about mine right now. Yeah, just there's just something about him. And I think that I've had a few dogs, and none have ever imprinted on me quite like this one. And yeah, it's going to suck. That's the, you know, having animals, I think that's the toughest part about it, is you're going to outlive
How old
them.
Is it?
Seven. He's going to be seven. So he's healthy time. Too.
Good.
Yeah, he's got he's not overweight. I don't overfeed him. He runs quite a bit, so I live in an area where I can throw the ball for him from where I'm at. So yeah, I would imagine probably 12, 13, you know, I'm hoping.
Yep.
So yeah, that's cool that you got to do that, man. I remember when I was in my transit going from state prison to federal prison. We went through Florence, Arizona, and there was a contract facility there where they had the same thing. They had a dog program there. And so we got to see some of the dogs because we were separate, because we were just coming through in transit, right? So they separate you from the main populations of any place that you go to. So you usually get your own dorms. You know how that goes.
Yep.
So yeah, they had that there. So I just thought that man, that's so cool. How that would make your sentence go by so much faster, having a little friend around, you know, to talk to every day. You know, I like animals better than I like people, man.
Me too. I used to train my dog every morning at like 4:30, get up and train her, and then after I trained her, I would take her back into my cell and I set my lockers up. Because I live by myself with the dog in a certain way. And it was like a ritual. Every morning I would train her, feed her, take her out and everything, and then go back into my bed. She would come, sit there and look at me. I'd shake my head, okay. She put her two paws up, I grab her bum, put her under the blanket so the cop didn't see it at the 5 o'clock count, and then and just go to sleep.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
All right, so you get out. All right, what is life like? You spent 21 years in. You get out. What's that like? And what's life like for you?
At first, it was scary because, you know, I was institutionalized, and I had a hearing on closed circuit TV because I authored the motion myself for media release, for using compassionate release, because Trump changed the law with prison reform, and now you could go to the court and try to get a compassionate release. Before that, you could only go to the warden of the institution you were in, and they would just rubber stamp it, and you were done. So when prison reform hit, I put a motion in to the warden for immediate release, and he just denied me. So then I put a motion into federal court, and they gave me a hearing. And so what I did is I got a pro bono attorney who's my friend now. Her name is Allison Corey. She volunteered and argued my motion, and we won. And I was granted an immediate release. So I'm 15 and a half years into prison sentence, and I had no idea I was going to go home that day. I just, I had a shot to win. And they let me out the door 2 hours later. They did the paperwork. So I was thrust back into society, still institutionalized. My family was there. The driver of the camp, it was a 2-hour ride. I'll never forget. It was pouring, the worst rainstorm I've ever seen. And then when I was in Berlin, New Hampshire, when I hit the Massachusetts border, it stopped raining completely. And from the Massachusetts border on, up until last year, my life was heaven. I appreciated every breath, everything I saw, every change. Going over the Zakim Bridge, they built that while I was away. Just life was so unbelievable. I embraced everything. I was living for every moment like it was my last. It was just like, it's been an incredible ride. Within a year, I published my book. Everything was going amazing. Rebuilt relationship with my kids, taking care of my mom. When I went to that dog program in 2016, I was already in the dog program. My mother had that stroke, and she almost died, and she's paralyzed from the waist down. And that's, like I said, that's what I do now. I take care of my mom. But, before that, she was a vibrant woman, going to every casino she could. She loved to gamble, loved to travel, was self-sufficient. And then her whole life changed. And so now that I'm home, I'm showing her a better way of life. Like, we go to the casino, I take her to the casino. I make sure she gets good. Like, I cook good. I had 2 restaurants before I got arrested. So I cook her home-cooked meals. We live, a good life, considering. And, we're in a 2,000-square-foot condo. When I got arrested, I had a 6,500-square-foot house. And now we're renting a condo, too. It's not even handicap accessible. So, it's been rough financially. But like I said, you can't replace time. So I'm living every moment vibrantly, and I'm vibrating on a completely different frequency than I was before I got in. Before I went away, I was selfish. I had anger problems. I had road rage. I was just a completely different human being. Now I appreciate everything and everybody that's been there for me.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I know how you feel with the anger thing, because I'd suffered from that for quite some time. And it comes in waves. Sometimes it comes back, but it's just a matter of knowing what to do with it and not pausing and knowing the triggers and the feelings that come up when you're not dealing with something that's causing it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I totally understand that. Let me ask you a question. So, I've never done a long period of time. For me, 3 years was the max, and it was 18 in one and 18 in another. And so I never got any help, I would say, because by the time I got in and got there, none of the programs, they were all waiting lists, and people that, you know, been for the waiting lists are super long. So, you know, there's no shot. So people that are incarcerated from 1 to 5 years, do you feel like the recidivism is higher in them than it is for folks that have been in for 6 to more? Right. Cause I feel like the longer a person is in, the recidivism is a lot lower because you've had more, you know what I mean? It's a chunk. Yeah. Right.
I agree, because like I'm living proof of it. I did 41 months. I was back in 3 years. Now that I did this long stretch, like I would never even, I couldn't even pay me enough money to do anything really bad. Like I would never sell a drug again. I would never carry a gun again. I would never, you know, rob anybody again. You know, these are things like I would never even contemplate in doing. So yeah, it's definitely a huge deterrent, because I do not want to go back for a long stretch. Just telling it like it is. And that's why I'm not one of these guys who, you know, like there are people that don't care and they go right back to the life knowing that there's a way out for them. They already have it planned in their head that if they get in trouble, they're going to tell on somebody. But it's not my style. I would never do that. So I'm man enough to say, hey, this life is over, guys. And, you know, I have friends that are still in the life that never did the stretches, younger guys, older guys, and it's not for me. So.
And you also have to watch out for the folks, because once you get, you know, there's this ghost dope thing that, you know, once you get involved in anything conspiracy wise or drug thing with anybody, all they really have to do now is just mention your name in something, and that's it. They don't have to, yep. They don't have to produce any drugs. Doesn't have to be any controlled buys. Drug addict or whatever, somebody who's, you know, a not honorable person is incentivized to tell on you and tell the DEA or whoever the agency is anything that they want to hear. And it doesn't have to be true, because they're not going to investigate it anyways.
Yeah. When I got arrested and got the 21 years, my friend begged me, probably 30 phone calls. And I was rolling at the time. I was building houses. I was building a whole street. I owned 6 houses. I was building my own home. Come on, let's rob this guy. That's why I went away for a conspiracy to distribute cocaine the second time. And carrying a gun, and they had brandishing a weapon. But I said no a bunch of times, and I said, I'll lend you the money. He said, no, because I had learned my lesson. I was, you know, peddling weed at the time, but, you know, that was it. And I kept saying no. And then, like you just said, he fabricated this whole story where it was my idea. He was afraid of me, and I talked him into it. I have no reason to lie now. I mean, because I already got the time. So if I did, I would just tell it like it is. But he told the prosecutor that I forced him to do it. He was afraid of me. I needed the money. When it was reversed, he needed the money. And, you know, they bought it hook, line, and sinker. Because I don't talk, and when I get arrested, you know, I was at the mercy of this rat who made up the story. And, you know, I had to go to trial, and I was dead because they had a body wire. So because I wouldn't, like I said, cooperate, and they listened to everything he said, even though it was like 90%, 80%, you know, untrue. Yeah, did I do the crime? Absolutely. But not the way what he's saying it. Like, I think they had a vengeance for me because he portrayed, like, I threatened him into doing it, and they were scared of him, and it was all untrue. And, you know, when a guy is looking to save his own hide, he'll come up with great stories, you know, better than my book.
Well, also, but, too, yeah. The agencies as well, once they get a narrative, you know, if they do any investigation, they don't let the investigation point the narrative out. They make the investigation fit their narrative, which tends to be a huge problem.
When he got arrested, he had 5 different amounts of money I gave him after the robbery, 5 different amounts. And my lawyer said to the jury, The guy's been staring at his feet the whole time like he's reading a script off the floor. He hasn't looked at my client once, and he gave five different numbers of money amounts that he gave to him. He's not telling the truth. But once you're in that big courtroom and it says U.S. District Court and they have the big high ceiling, and it's United States of America versus Anthony Bucci, you can't win.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they got
it's rigged.
Yep. Everything's a Ponzi scheme. Yep. Everything. So,
like I said, I was guilty.
Yeah.
Should I have gotten 21 years? Absolutely not. But you know what? I needed to go away because I was running reckless, and I wouldn't even be the person I am today had I not. Had I beat that case, probably would have been the worst thing for me.
Yeah.
In my book, I actually thank United States District Attorney's Office and the judge for giving me the harsh sentence that I got because they saved my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I there's a lot of people that say the same thing, you know. Sometimes that's what it takes, that pause to get away from, you know, yourself and, well, actually to get away from the things that are causing you to be able to get in touch with yourself and to figure out, you know, the issues that keep you doing whatever it is that you're doing. And I don't know about yourself, but I think that the number one safety issue in the United States and probably in the world is untreated trauma. And because of untreated trauma, people go out and, you know, are doing all these things, you know, the drugs, the addiction, all that other stuff is just symptoms of the underlying problems that aren't being dealt with.
Yeah, I agree. I'm working on my post-traumatic growth every day, you know, trying to become a better person and turn something good from something evil from all that trauma.
Yeah. Good for you. So let's move back because you want to touch on something. We're at 6:30 now, so let's move over to something more 6:30 recent.
6:30 in California.
Yeah, 6:30. It's not 9:30 in America's time over on the East Coast.
Yeah, I was at my computer getting ready, and you said, "I'll see you at 9. And I was 6, and I was like, "Aren't we supposed to do this right now?"
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, "Yeah, East Coast." So yeah, normally when you sign up, and I'd sent it to you, I did the sign up for you, so I should have sent it to you, but it might have went into your spam or your, you know, whatever it is.
Joking, Sean.
It all worked out.
Yeah.
So tell me about something that you said that you're struggling with now that has your recovery kind of put a monkey wrench in your recovery.
Yeah, life was unbelievable. I was like the best. I was radiating like positivity out of my body. People I would meet would be like, "You're so happy." Like eating like any like food, I would be happy. Just, you know, going to the beach was like unbelievable. Like everything was like starting life over again. Everything was going so great. I was working on my relationship with my kids. That was going unbelievable. Like things couldn't have been better. You know, I'm wearing this shirt right here to tribute my daughter. It's a state police shirt, and it has, you know, it's dedicated to her. So what happened was, like, me and my daughter, and I have a lot of differences because she was stubborn. She was just like me. And so when I got out of prison, she was my hardest child to win back because, you know, she just, you know, she was really mad at me. So when she sat back and she watched me the first 6 months, you know, and she saw the change, she saw how I was treating my mother, she saw that, you know, how dedicated I was to writing my book, you know, being a different person. I took I'm a life coach. I took a life coaching class when I got out, you know, just moving in all the right directions. Like I said, the positivity was just flowing out of me, and, you know, she witnessed it, and I got her back, and we were like so close. It was like unbelievable. I was in heaven. I was just like, every day was just unbelievable. And we talked at least 4 or 5 times a day, whether it was texting or on the phone. She got switched to the barracks in the town I was living, Medford, Massachusetts. She would come by my house almost every night. I would cook for her, make juice for her. she got a dog, but she had to give it back because it was the breeder inbred it with, you know, brother and sister, and the dogs were just uncontrollable. But I was training her dog for her. You know, life couldn't have been better. I went to bed one night, and I got a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning that she'd been killed. And my whole life, in the blink of an eye, got rotten. God, like, I hit rock bottom in one night.
Yeah, that's tough, man. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So what tools did you have to help you get through that, that you'd, you know, learn while you were, you know, locked down? Did you have anything to that you picked up while you were in prison to help you, like, sort of get through this? Any tools of, you know, people to talk to or anything?
Not right away. I mean, the magnitude of the devastation was just like nothing I've ever experienced. Like, taking that 21-year sentence and walking out of that courtroom, I had my shoulders back, chin up, never shed a tear. I don't think I shed it. Me and my sister were real close. The first year I got locked up, she died of cancer. My father died in 2012 while I was away. And I was in pain, but I never shed a tear. Just, I kept it all in because that's what a man does. But with a child, when they came and told me, I fell to my knees. I mean, I was devastated. It was just like, I just talked to my daughter. It was her birthday the night before. I sang her happy birthday. She sent me back a text saying, I love our mom and dad. We planned to have her birthday party the next day. She wanted Chinese food. And here I am, three police officers coming to my house at 4 a.m. to tell me my daughter died. It was like, and still devastating, but I learned that, like, it's out of my control. It happened. There's nothing I can do but move forward and make her proud and honor her memory. And that's what I did. I started a foundation in her name, Tamabuchi Foundation. I want to, you know, build a park in her honor because, like, as a father, it's my worst nightmare that she'll be forgotten. Like, she pulled over the side of the road to help a disabled motorist and a truck hit her. And her niche was helping others, and that's why she became a state trooper. So, to me, she passed me the torch. Yes, I'm a con. I did 21 years. I did 41 months. And we were in different worlds, but we were, like, inseparable. And, you know, father-daughter relationship couldn't have been better at the time. Yes, we had our troubles in the past, but, you know, so my goal now is just take that torch, help others. You know, I've already helped a bunch of people. I trained a service dog for one of the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing, and I did it for free. I've counseled a lot of people on, you know, depressed people. And once I became a life coach, and I've never charged anyone. So, you know, I'm doing positive things. I want to do things that she can look down and be proud of me. And like I said, I want to build a park in her honor. And that's what the foundation is for, to build a park in her honor. But I've also like helped people that, you know, had nothing at Christmas time by donating to them at clothes and money and stuff. But I also want to help people with mental health counseling, families of, you know, people that were in tragedies. You know, doesn't have to be just a car accident. It could be any tragedy. Family loses somebody in some sort of way. I want to provide them mental health counseling. I have two mental health counselors on retainer. And, you know, I'm just here to help. If anybody wants to see, you can go to the website. It's Tamabuchi Foundation. Any donations too, you know, like you said at the beginning of the show, nothing is too small when you're trying to do something good that will change the world.
There we go. So there's your...
Hey, remember that guy?
Yeah, so there's a couple of pictures of you, I would imagine, when you were first in, quite younger then.
Yep.
There's your story about you. So that's your website, and you sell apparel too. And we didn't even talk about the vegan part of your part of you. How did you even get involved in veganism to begin with? I know I was in Sheridan, and I tried it for a month, and I didn't like it. We were, you know, Sheridan had a farm, so we'd get fresh vegetables and stuff from there, so from the camp. And it was pretty easy to do it, but there was something about it that just didn't work for me. I didn't like it.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, it doesn't go for them. But with me, you know, I was looking into it when I went away. That, you know, as you know, the food they feed us in there is terrible. They get $1.25 a day to feed us. So I just gravitated towards just like the tuna and the oatmeal and that stuff. I didn't become vegan until I got out of prison. And I met a girl, and she was plant-based. And, you know, I was open to it because I was already on a spiritual journey. And, you know, by eating animals and all that, it, you know, our environment is affected also. And, you know, I wanted to change the frequency I was on, and it's part of my journey of becoming a, you know, a better person by, you know, trying to help the environment for our kids and their kids for years to come. So, you know, I'm vegan, but, you know, when my daughter died, I put on like 40 pounds, eating a lot of vegan junk food and all that. I just started actually my comeback. I'm doing now intermittent fasting right now.
Mm-hmm.
Eating 5 hours or 4 hours a day and fasting for 20, and, you know, to take the weight off and stuff and get back on my road, you know, because when you're in a good shape and you're in sound mind, everything is better. And, you know, I come to the conclusion, obviously, that I can't do anything but move forward. So that's what I'm doing. I'm moving forward. I'm trying to get that, light that fire inside of me again, and, you know, vibrate back on that frequency I was on. And I know my daughter would want that. So that's the road I'm taking now. You know, it took 10 months. I mean, for the first 4 or 5 months, I couldn't leave the house. I was a basket case. So, you know, I'm coming to terms with it. And all I can do is move forward one day at a time and try to do the right thing and make her proud. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, that's awesome.
Still a very touchy subject still, as you can see, but at least I'm able to talk about it now. I couldn't talk about it, you know, I had to go to grief counseling. I've been doing that every week, but it took me a long time to be able to talk about it.
Well, and you're in a better place too, you know, in your life, where you're able to deal with it and not go off the deep end because of it. You know what I mean? I don't know if you do know what I mean, but, you know, like,
no, I hear you. I hear you a lot of grief. It's just not easy.
Yeah. Well, talking through it, and, you know, hopefully you got people that you can turn to talk to that are helping you through the situation. You know, I don't know if you belong to any men's groups or anything like that. I was actually thinking about starting a men's group, an online one, like through this thing, like a Zoom or something like that. And just because men need to talk, you know, and there's not a lot of outlets for us to talk in forums that we feel safe in. You know, you can talk to a lot of different things, but I mean, feeling safe enough to divulge information that would actually, you know, you need to let go of, you know?
Yep. I agree. I would definitely do something like that, you know, with people I trusted and, you know, guys I like. But I've been getting the grief therapy every week, so that's really helping a lot.
Well, that's cool, man. And that, you know, like I said, I apologize again, you know, sorry for your loss. I can't imagine that. I've got two daughters, and I can't imagine losing one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've had friends that lost children, and I never, like, realized the depth of the loss and the coldness of, in your heart when that happens, like you're crushed right to the core.
So what are some of the other things that you're working on? You know, so I know you're taking care of your mom. You've got the book, you've got some, your coaching. Have you thought about, I know that you mentioned that you've trained a couple of dogs pro bono, but I mean, have you thought about turning that into a business? Maybe.
Actually, I did, but you know, my passion and my dream is to get this movie made, or a series. I'd rather a series. And, you know, and that's what I've been channeling all my energy into. And I was actually getting someplace. And then that had the tragedy happen to me, and I just fell off the map. And I just basically started reaching out recently and doing podcasts again. And you never know. You know, I'm all about the law of attraction, and I'm trying to get myself back on that, to vibrate on that frequency that I was on, because when you're on that frequency and you're vibrating that energy, you know, somebody out there could, you know, can feel it, see it, and the universe will answer you and help you. And, you know, but when you're down and out and you're feeling sorry for yourself, you're going to get exactly what you're putting out there. Yep, so I'm trying to get my energy level back, that get back on that frequency. And, you know, like somebody might hear it and say, hey, I have a friend, and, you know, order my book and say, wow, this is great, because I have all 5-star reviews. And I had a, before my daughter got killed, I had a big, you know, production company that was supposed to make me an offer, a movie offer. And you know how that goes. Mm-hmm. All COVID, I don't know. And my main character's name is Vinnie Bruno, and they were saying, we're trying to figure out a way, you know, to who to find to play a young Vinnie Bruno. So I thought, you know, it was a done deal. I'm just waiting on an offer. Then a month went by, yeah. 2 months went by, and my daughter got killed, and I fell off the face of the earth. And so I reached out to the guy, you know, recently, and he's like, we did call you, but you never got back to us. And I told him what happened. He felt horrible, but, you know,
yeah,
that's life. So I just got to keep moving forward. My daughter was an advocate of my project, so I'm going to, like I said, do things, keep it moving forward and positive, and
you'll get it made.
I'll get a break. Yeah. I'll get it made.
You'll get it made. You got some conviction behind it, and there's a reason, and there's a great story behind it. You know what I mean? The reason why you're doing it. So you'll get it. You just got to keep throwing it out there, like you said. Keep it in the universe. Keep it in the mix. Keep it bouncing around, and someone's going to catch it.
I'd rather fail than never try.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah, you can. It's 100% guaranteed that you're not going to get anything if you don't do anything. You know, I can't guarantee what you're going to get if you do something, but I can 100% guarantee you're not going to get shit if you don't try.
Yep. Yeah, I've hit rock bottom twice. Like when I was in solitary, like I told you before, and I started the book, I was in the ashes, and I rose out of that like the phoenix. So now, you know, I hit rock bottom again, and there's only one place but up.
Yep, there's like nowhere to go but up. Says. There's nowhere to go but up, man. Well, hey, I think that's a great point to end this on, and I just want to thank you for giving me your time and the audience your time and sharing your story with us. And again, you know, heartfelt apologies and condolences go out to you about your daughter.
Can I say one thing more thing?
Yeah, go for it.
Thank you, anybody that's watching it. Thanks for watching it. I'd be honored if you guys check my book out, Infinity Crew. It's on Amazon and 70 other selling platforms. I am The Convicted Vegan on Instagram. I am Anthony J. Bucci on Facebook. If anybody needs, you know, to talk, you're feeling down and out and I can help you, DM me, because I've had people message me. I had a guy who heard my last podcast, a great guy from Australia, and we became friends. He lost 2 daughters. So, you know what I mean? We're not alone, and it doesn't have to be tragedy. Pain is pain. Whether it's, you know, it doesn't have to be just losing a kid, or it could be a husband. It could be anything. It doesn't even have to be death. It could be, you know, you lost your job, and you're not doing good, and you're feeling down and out. I'm here. You can DM me, and I mean it. Thank you again, Sean, for having me. And I had a good time.
All right, there it is there. The Convicted Vegan, everybody. Anthony Bucci. All right, brother. Hang out for a second. I'll be right with you as soon as we hit the outro here. All right?
Okay, bro.
Thank you, brother.
All right.
All right. All right. Awesome. Awesome. Awesome conversation, man. I definitely appreciate that, man. Yeah, dude, 21 years. It's a long time. I've been to prison, and losing your freedom definitely sucks, but I have no idea what it feels like to be there that long. Luckily, I learned my lesson with only three. So, all right. Hey, until next time, keep it 100. Stay true to yourself, because everything else is just noise. See you later, everybody.
You've been listening to the Nowhere to Go But Up podcast. Sean is a single dad, a union blue-collar guy, and he spent time in federal and state prison for drug trafficking and fraud. When he was released from prison in 2006, all he had was the clothes on his back, a bag of mail, and some paperwork. Since then, he's turned his life around and shares the struggles and successes on this podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you were moved to connect to the show. Book a guest spot. For merch, Patreon, PayPal, and social media links, go to linktr.ee/nowheretogobutup.
On Instagram at nowheretogobutupnow. On Twitter at butupnow. On the YouTube channel at nowheretogobutuppodcast.
See you next time.